Ray, what did you think of this episode?
It was very good. It was one of the most moving episodes of this season. The reason I have this tone is just because of how it ended. It was extremely cinematic. This director is very, very good at letting the show breathe, and she takes her time with scenes that are emotional. Viserys moved me extremely deeply.
Patty.
The actor.
I had a certain amount of emotion towards Viserys increasingly as the series went on, and we even paused throughout the episode to talk about someone who just gave and gave and believed and believed, but also didn't move and was absolutely the product of his choices.
Yeah.
Where maybe even the show will never explicitly state it or show it, but certainly the way that the Maesters are shot implies that they're taking advantage.
Yeah, who knows? And I mean, because he does seem to be very impressionable and trusting.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't have the Machiavellian mind, right? To know, he trusts people and he wants things to be peaceful.
Like this life is undid him.
Yeah.
Because of the exposure.
Yeah. And so I don't know if the Maesters did something or poisoned him slowly or whatever. But he never questioned it.
He never looked into it.
Yeah. And I think that's one of his, maybe part of his
flaws,
you know, tragic flaws. Yeah.
When he's looking at everyone at the party.
His hubris. Yeah. So it's that notion of him, kind of contributing to his own undoing, because he's unquestioning, and he's not a seeker. He does not look for truth. He is often very, very content with lying to himself, lying to other people.
Pure avoidance.
Because he's avoidant, because he wants to just keep the peace.
All I'll just say this. I said it a few times as choices, and there was a moment of him looking at those around him, like in his family, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was beautiful. And I want to say this about this episode, because it won't just, like, I absolutely have to hand it to the range of this episode, mm-hmm. where I had, you know, where I have my couch standing moments.
Yeah.
And they're, I only dedicate them when I absolutely can't help it. And Ray, would you care to name this episode's couch standing moment?
So, I mean, and you know, this is me sometimes when I just like, I'll be like, oh my God, or I'll
what
just like
keep,
grip
Ray?
Your shoulders.
What can he keep?
It's that moment where that brother of Lord Corlys was called the strong boys for what they are, bastards, and called his mother Rhaenyra a whore, the queen to be. And, you know, and Paddy so gloriously says, I'll have your tongue for this. And the moment that Matt Smith, a.k.a. Damon, a.k.a. Bay,
mm-hmm.
He just cuts his head off, just decapitates him and goes, he can keep his head.
Yeah,
that he was can keep a his shining tongue. Moment of television.
The body kept the tongue. Everything else above the tongue vanished.
Done. Gone.
And
yeah,
I even commented the messed up thing is that Vaemond is completely right. I obviously, once again, wouldn't have approached going about things that way, right? Yeah. Calling, it is just stupid. And I didn't want him to die.
Yeah.
Because I also believe in that sort of justice, mm-hmm. but I also believe in being smart.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a sense even earlier on in the season about Vaemond, and it's like, what are you saying right now?
Mm-hmm.
So there was always a question with me of Vaemond, especially talking in front of Daemon. Now, Ray, imagine us watching this season again, and then that scene in episode 2 or 3 when Vaemond is just talking and Daemon says nothing on that ridge, because he's just really annoyed at how I suppose he gets to have that deliverance now.
Absolutely, yeah. And so, also it's just like, you know, you often see like, people who are not strategic in Game of Thrones heavily pay the price.
They truly do.
You know?
Yeah, you do well in that world. I think you're extremely...
You
really would.
I was looking, you know, that word in Greek tragedy, I think it's called hamartia or hamartia. which is like one's tragic flaw, which is like a character missing the point of something, and that being the reason that they're, you know, they lose or they die or something like that.
Yeah,
it's very, very common in the old sort of Greek tragedies, and it's very common here as well. You know, in the first show, you had someone like Ned Stark, like his idealism him killed.
Yep.
Paddy, his, you know...
I like that we're calling him Paddy.
Yeah. Viserys, yeah.
Emmy, please.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Emmy.
The weight with which he acted, his voice, his
tenor. I cry, I think about it now.
The extraordinary prosthetics, I mean, he did not look like he was acting.
No.
Because his physical state, he looks great, you know, in the interviews are so far from the character that he played.
Such a jovial
and
guy.
And yet I could not tell that he was acting. He was that man. His labored breathing, the way that he spoke, that incredibly epic scene of him sitting the throne today.
Yeah.
And just the love that he has for his daughter, just prompting him to be able to make that walk. That was incredibly moving.
And then also, however, at the very end of his life, to confide in Alicent about Aegon, which goes against
But
Rhaenyra.
The thing is, I think he's delusional. I think he thinks he was talking to Rhaenyra. Because, you know, because...
Aegon, though.
No, but the thing is, in the conversation Rhaenyra was saying, is it true? Do you believe it to be true? And in this question, he goes, it is true. You know, so I don't think
there's
don't...
two Aegons too. There's Aegon the Conqueror, right, from the past, and Aegon the Son. So I think you're right that there's going to be this thing where he was talking about the Song of Ice and Fire, thinking he was talking with Rhaenyra.
I really think so. And of course, you know, she's going to run off with that, and saying you're the one. You might, like, clearly he's getting his words mixed up, and he's like delusional and so in pain at this point. But I'm sure she's going to run with that, you know, once this has settled. Yeah. But it was very, very nice to see them at dinner and all the layers there, you know, like moments where Alicent felt like she could just momentarily. She was Rhaenyra's friend again for like, you know, 5 minutes.
Alicent,
And you know, you can also see sort of Rhaenyra's eyes looking at her, being like, can I trust this?
Yeah.
No, it's too late. I want to trust this, but I can't.
Well, you pointed out something where Rhaenyra says this about Alicent.
Mm.
And you know, and you had this sense of that being strategic of her.
Yeah.
With glimmers of the friendship.
Yeah.
But Alicent, surprisingly, unless she's a very good actor.
Yeah.
As in the character pretending,
She
fell into what Rhaenyra was saying that little bit more than Rhaenyra thought she would.
Yeah.
And then Otto suddenly turns and says, wait a minute. It's like, you'll make a fine queen. Like, hold on.
It's almost like, you know, the mask that her father has been putting on her for the last 10 years, right?
Forcing
it slipped
on her.
And we saw that good girl and her... And good, I mean loving, right? Mm. Like, and we see threads of that. You know, the way that she treated Diana. There is a baseline level of... kindness, and she's progressive. Like, you know, she didn't kill Sir Criston. She's not.
Diana was in danger.
We didn't know what was going to happen with Diana, right? Or whatever. But there's a baseline level of kindness that her father has been trying to snuff out of her for a long time, and she has had to keep that kindness repressed in order to survive in this world.
Mm.
I also think there's an added layer to the fact that, you know, Viserys sits around the table and tells, you know, everyone that he loves them dearly, right?
Yeah. Oh, you pointed out something I didn't notice.
But I don't think, like, she and her two children, you know, Aegon and Aemond, who we will talk about in great detail in a second. But I don't think, you know, Alicent and her two children feel nearly as loved as, say, somebody like Rhaenyra, whom he repeatedly favors over and over again.
No.
So there are complex layers to this in terms of, like, yes, people want power. I think Otto is probably driven more by power. But if I think of Alicent or the children, right, there's also this level to have this layer where they want their father's recognition or their king's recognition, which they don't get. And there's a huge disparity between the way Rhaenyra is treated, you know, with her strong sons who are brunette as fuck, you know.
Wise, brave.
Strong.
Careful.
No, lol. And so it's just, you can see, like, and I really love the writers and the directors for bringing up these layers for us to really understand and appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we obviously host the House of the Dragon podcast. I, for the first time, very early on in this episode, said we have to speak with this director because you said something you said beautifully, and she would very much, I think, appreciate you saying this, is good is good, quality is quality.
Yeah.
And by and large, the quality of directing has been pretty good,
mm-hmm.
but this skyrocketed, this shot up. It really stood out
from
Damon discovering the egg, you know, light coming through the wound. Go.
Oh, yeah. Just you can tell this woman, Geeta,
mm-hmm.
she's extremely talented.
Incredible.
And great at storytelling, at pacing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even some of the earlier images, you know, of like a sliver of light through the crack, right? It's,
yeah.
And, you know, you see someone's hand there. And like even the autopsy scene with the maesters and that guy
who got killed,
yeah, who got decapitated, yeah, Vaymond.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I get the names confused.
That's cool.
That scene was shot extraordinary, even if
it was disgusting,
like a Renaissance
art,
you know.
Like an autopsy, yeah.
Yeah, it was absolutely stunning. Yeah. So this, and you know, the walk, the long walk of Viserys was incredible.
Rhaenys,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
She saw him do that,
yeah.
And in that moment decided to back. I think because she's a strategist, she also doesn't care because, as you said, her son is dead.
Mm.
And you pointed this out later. There was a scene with the candles behind her, very powerful.
Oh yeah.
Eve Best, my gosh.
Yeah.
So much gravitas, and you're right, she's like, she doesn't care that her brother-in-law essentially has had his face cut in half, and in that moment she sees her cousin,
yeah,
like just witnessing that strength to push through again, this man very much as we saw on death's doorstep, and just doing that, and he spoke so clearly, so much lucidity. And she puts her, she throws
say
her
say what you will,
support.
She aligned with her blood. She aligned with the Targaryens.
With her Targaryens,
you know?
Yeah,
she didn't side with the Velaryons.
Yeah.
She went for what would strengthen her house.
Yeah.
Right? And I also think
it's almost a betrayal, if you think about it. But again, her...
But the reason I think she did that is, I was telling you, it's just like, I think she's also extremely numb from the grief.
Mm-hmm.
Of having lost her son,
yeah.
Possibly having her husband dead. Like, as far as she's concerned, like, the two central male figures in her life mm-hmm. are no longer there.
Yeah.
So I don't think she kind of gives two shits, to be honest, about the... Or, like, I think she can see the cost that ambition has inflicted on her family. Yeah. And so I don't think she's in it as much. And that's why she's so comfortable, like you said, looking at a dead man's body, because her family has been cursed with a lot of death and tragedy.
I feel bad.
So she doesn't care. It's like, I don't care if my eyes are open or closed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, she's sort of, it's
oh,
like...
Oh, that's a beautiful line too.
And so, you know, that sort of Nietzschean sense, like, you know, if you stare at the abyss long enough, the abyss mm-hmm. will stare back at you. So it's like... She's saying the stranger has visited me many times, right? So it's like you can tell that she's been grieving and she's been sitting with those parts of life too.
Because I surmise that as soon as Corlys, you know, was able to recognize the brunt of what had happened with his son, that he could only have done what I'm sure he's done in the past to process things, which is, I looked it up actually, or I rather discovered it. You know, the psychology behind movement, like going for walks, for Corlys, obviously, for him, it's a voyage.
He went on a grief voyage. Yeah.
It's because the eyes move mm-hmm. from side to side. There's constant movement,
mm-hmm.
which prevents the amygdala from activating, which prevents stewing and fearing and so it actually, but he's been obviously away for a long time. In fact, that's the line that opens the
show,
episode is I haven't seen my Lord Husband for that long.
For 6 years.
And we don't, I mean, yeah, and as far as we see, he doesn't appear in this episode, but we know that he's ill.
Yeah, and we're not sure if he's going to make it or not.
So that's interesting.
And, you know,
the sea snake is strong.
That's particularly something that I loved about Viserys's, you know, speech at the council, which is, this is already something settled, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought he was like a great mirror to everybody.
He was.
Saying, you know, you're all, not all, it's like you guys are freaking vultures. Like, yeah, you're just...
Why, like, are we taking...
While he's not even dead yet.
Yeah.
I've already told you what I want to do with this, but you're just preying on death and weakness and illness.
Yeah. And he's,
to advance your own agenda. And I fucking see every single one of you.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that was really interesting. But I also really love...
Are you ready? Let's go.
Shall we get into it?
Let's get into it. Go.
Shall we get into it?
Yes.
Aemond.
The...
Evil Legolas. Literally
stand out, like he stands. And that's all.
Oh my gosh.
The command. The respect. And he got the nod from Daemon.
He really did.
Because he's doing his own thing.
Yeah, he really is.
He's not just echoing or shadowing or trying to do his own Daemon. He is Aemond.
He is Aemond.
With this, as you said, evil Legolas vibe.
Yeah. It was, I mean, because the first scene that we, you know, see him in.
He's fighting.
But he's kicking like a panther. Sir Criston's ass. Right?
I don't give
and
a
we
shit
see
about
him
Tony's.
With the eye. The eye is so focused and decisive. You know, the eye of the dragon.
He looks like a...
He's extreme. And, you know, even when he was a child, I think, you know, because of the way maybe others treated him, his brother, his father, right? He kind of had this fire in him that he just has his eye on the prize. He's got to ride the biggest dragon.
Absolutely.
He's got to be the best fighter. He's just got his, like... He's so driven by his rage, I think.
There was a scene, we're watching Curb Your Enthusiasm simultaneously, and don't worry, this is a purposeful aside. Larry has something to say, and he has someone listening to him who says, interesting, I wouldn't think of it that way. I need to get on that level, you know? That's very high up of you. I need to get on that level. And for Aemond, he is on Vega. And, you know, Le Kiri Vegard, like he did it, like as a kid.
Yeah.
And Vega flies the highest too.
Yeah.
He has the high eye.
Yeah.
The, in any situation, he rises completely above and, as you said, cuts straight to what's important.
Yeah.
Because he's had that, like, and he has monofocus.
Yeah.
And so when he, as soon as he defeats Criston, he's not even looking at Criston.
Yeah.
When he says, you know, I don't give a shit about Tourneys. Okay,
right?
Cousins,
do
you
want...
Hello, Cousins, are you here as a spa, you know?
Yeah.
It's
he's also extremely well cast.
Yeah, look at this guy.
I was telling you about the Neville Longbottom effect.
Yeah.
That puberty has been very kind to this man.
I may have lost an eye.
You know, it's a different actor.
Yeah.
But as in showcasing him
he
to
looks
have
like
that
a dragon.
Long hair, mm-hmm. he very much looks like a dragon.
Yeah.
And that sort of a quintessential Targaryen man. He's also physically the most similar to Daemon.
Yeah.
You know? Energetically.
What a great moment
at
the end.
He's a rogue
he's like,
prince. You
I
know?
See what you're doing.
He's also
gotcha.
The second born.
Yes.
So there are a lot of parallels there in terms of what he thinks. He probably thinks he's smarter and better and more worthy
a final
of the
toast.
Throne, you know?
Stays completely quiet and then... Oh, sorry, I apologize. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, well, you're going to say...
No, that's okay. It's that... His staying completely silent and then at the very end saying a final toast.
Yeah.
And then, you know, digging into the strong boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's just like when you could see like as soon as, you know, one of the strong boys felt insulted by something that Aegon said to his betrothed, you know, about having sex and knowing how to do it. They were about to get into a spa. And the minute they notice, or, you know, Aemond notices that the two of them are about to get into it, he just stands. He says no words and he just stands. Right? So the presence and the masculine energy there, which is he does not say a single word, but he poses the threat of what could happen if this situation escalates. And the situation just de-escalates.
Very, very well observed.
But then another moment happens with him and Daemon after that.
Yes.
What did you make of that?
Well, the play-by-play of that entire scene is masterful. And again, Geeta, I have to... That is her. That's a director.
Yeah.
Saying, to stage this in the most effective way, I will have this character say this, stand there... for this long, that's a director. And simply as she knew this is like, for me, Aemond is this Chekhov's, you know, this Chekhov's gun throughout the episode. So silent. And we know how he lost his eye, and it was the strong boy.
Oh, yeah.
And as soon as that same strong boy who took his eye mm-hmm. is threatening his brother, all he does, as you said, is stand up.
And they're
up.
About to become, you know, the Lord of the Tides.
Yeah, and he's like, does he care? It's like, I don't care who you are.
You guys are, I know who you are.
Yeah.
You're strong, wise, healthy, you're strong boys. Right?
And Damon loved that.
Yeah, he was impressed.
That because it's true Damon game.
Yeah, he was like my nephew.
Yeah,
like he. I think he was kind of inspired that there's like a rogue boy like him in the family.
Yeah.
But again, it's sort of like this nature documentary thing. The minute that Damon stepped in,
mm-hmm.
You could see that Amund also de-escalated. You know, it's like dragon sees dragon.
But not fearfully.
Yeah, not fearfully. Yeah. It was out of respect. I think there's a mutual recognition there, which is we're both secondborns. Yeah. We're both sick of the bullshit.
Yeah.
We're both better than everybody else. But we just have to calm our farms a bit.
Extremely well put.
So that was extremely good. The scenes between Rhaenyra, Daemon and Viserys.
The three, please go ahead.
I was just saying to you, I was being, you know, like jesting a bit, but you know, there's this in the pilot of Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
You know that moment where Rick turns to Morty and goes, "You and me,
it's just
Morty.
You and me, Morty.
It's just you and me, Rick and Morty.com. Nine seasons. It's just me, you and me." Like in that show, the person that Rick loves the most
is Morty.
And Viserys. And in this scene, it's like, you know, it's those three amigos, which
Godemon,
is it's Viserys Rhaenyra. Loves his daughter and he loves his brother. Rhaenyra, she loves her father and she loves her husband.
Us three,
uncle.
You and me,
and
Rhaenyra.
Same with Daemon, right? You know, yes, he's sort of like he had a lot of rough edges, but you could tell he just loves his brother and Rhaenyra. It's these three people. It's the triangle, you know, which are the strongest relationships in this show. And it's just, you know, it's Rhaenyra, Daemon, and Viserys. 9seasons.com.
Thank you. You phrased it perfectly.
You know, and it was so beautiful to see that vulnerability and that love come through in those scenes. And like Daemon softening and him being little. And you could see
stuttering
his face
a bit.
And stuttering.
When he's by his brother's side.
Yeah. Yeah, that was beautiful.
Yeah.
And how, you know, again, Viserys would only let him, you know, walk him up the steps. He wouldn't really let anybody else help him.
If I watched that again, I would
incredibly
cry.
Moving.
Because what is beautiful about between them is they not only have a Targaryen, they don't have a brotherhood, not only have a brotherhood bond, but a Targaryen brotherhood bond, which is, you know, again, relatives are even closer. Let's just put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And even in season one, in episode one or two, there's a sense that there's true love there.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, they're both hetero. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I would not be surprised if throughout, like, the Targaryen dynasty that there'd be brothers born and they would be homosexually.
Yeah.
Like, totally. Mm-hmm. And there is just the faintest echo. Obviously, they have their partners and everything, but there's a true love there to the point where it feels in some ways that they're one person.
Oh, really?
I felt that.
I didn't notice any of
I
that.
I felt like, no, just like a...
homoeroticism.
Not at all. But I know that in their, obviously, because the dynasty has been for many, many hundreds of years.
As in between them two, I didn't feel
And I didn't sense that either. But the reason why I even mention it is because there are moments, especially with Viserys and Daemon.
It's like Daemon is his, like, soul.
His other
friend.
Limbs.
Like the way he says brother, Daemon.
Over
like,
and over again.
Like it's just, it's like it's
here.
His best friend
Thank
or something
you.
like there's a homecoming, you know, when he speaks to him, and same with his daughter as well. So that's what I mean, like his kin, like his own. That's what I feel with them. And it was really poetic, that moment, you know, where he's seeing them smile. And I tell you, it's just like he's very tired and he's very sick and he's about to die.
Mm-hmm.
And he's happy.
And he's happy.
And he's wondering if it's going to last.
And his last word, my love.
And, you know, and he knows that it may not, but this moment is just enough, you know, where his daughter and his brother and his wife are smiling.
Yeah.
And he's with his grandchildren and then there's music and dancing.
And
I just thought, again, it was beautifully shot. It was very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the way that it ended, it was like I was watching Shakespeare in theater, you know, which is you just have
him,
you know, not out with a bang, but a whimper. Mm-hmm. You know, it was really Shakespearean the way that it ended, just like that sort of soft, like silent death of a king.
The poetry
really,
of that,
really beautiful.
The poetry of that is that when his body is very much on its own path towards, you know, decay, at the very end, it's tragic that he then says, finally, you know, ineffectually, but he does say it. He says no more, mm-hmm. which is the words he should have been saying 20, 30 years ago mm-hmm. to the maesters, to people fucking with him, to the leeches and the vultures. He should have said those words mm-hmm. no more.
Oh, yeah, I just have to correct something.
Go.
Yes, I said it was Shakespearean, but the out with a whimper, not a bang, that's T.S. Eliot from The Hollow Men. It's not
go.
Shakespeare.
You can,
pardon me.
People starting typing,
but
they can stop typing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I just wanted to correct
that's
that.
Okay,
like, yes, it was Shakespearean, but that reference itself is not Shakespeare. But still, it was like a king's monologue, you know, and then the scene ended in darkness. So it was like a play. It was phenomenally done.
The staging, for example, that line, which is now going to be all over Twitter, Ray's going to find it. He can keep his tongue. Like, that is a stage line. And by the way, once again, in recognition of his brother having this physical failing, all that Damon needed to hear was, it's like, he just had to hear him say it.
Yeah.
I'll have your tongue. And he immediately activates, because I'll just be the executor of that command.
Yeah.
I will activate as your the limbs that can move.
Yeah.
And as soon as he says that, that guy's head is gone. And it was thrilling.
And it was so lovely. Like, you can tell, because, you know, throughout their lives, they've had their rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
But just how much he loves his brother. And, and you know, towards the beginning of the show, you could see he wanted to protect him.
Yep.
But, you know, Viserys sort of isolated him and they were always, like, getting on each other's nerves. But you could tell, like, again, that profound love that exists and that sense of duty that exists towards his brother as well. And, yeah, you're right. All he had to hear was that instruction from his king. And then, I mean, you know, Rhaenyra's honor is tied up with that too. So it's like literally the only two people that he loves, that guy pissed off. And so he gets decapitated.
1,000%. And now I'm going to say that this episode had, I would say, 4 or 5 standard episodes worth of range. I'm serious. Because, and I obviously, you'll see in the runtime of this episode, this being reflected, because there's just this much to chew on, you know, this much to metabolize because of how generous, such a generous filmmaker, this person.
It was very good.
It was very, very good.
I really enjoyed her direction.
I think she may have given herself, and this is just me speculating, maybe when she comes on the show she can confirm.
Yes.
When she was laying out the episodes, like, I have this episode, hopefully she directs more. She's a gift. She's a gift to any directing role. That she said, I want every character in this episode to show at least 2 sides of them.
Mm.
At least. Mm. So there was no mono-sided
well said.
Performance. And so for everyone, and look at, we can go through every single character.
Yeah.
We see Rhaenyra ambitious. We see her vulnerable. We see her angry and accusatory.
Yep.
Even Aemond, we see him predatory,
mm-hmm.
and we see him stoic and silent, and we see him cheeky, you know?
Yeah.
Viserys, we see him very weak, very tragic, so powerful, you know?
Measured.
Loving. Noble.
Yeah.
Gracious, you know?
Yeah.
Even Vaemond, this bad timing... We see him sad. We see him, and I'm sure it's going to have gotten to many viewers the injustice.
Yeah.
However,
because he's right.
He's absolutely right.
And
it's
just love
shut
the
up.
Denial.
Just
I just love the denial. Everybody's just denying what is blatantly true.
And
that
it's
strong boys.
Yeah, they're very strong boys.
And it's just like, are you kidding me? Like, and then because of that blind love he has for his daughter.
Yeah.
You know, Viserys has for Rhaenyra.
Yeah.
We just all have to, like, go along with
it. Yeah.
And then everybody just, like, gets.
I think he was frustrated.
Prison?
He just said, look, I probably know I'm going to get killed in this court,
like,
but I'm going to say it. It will be yelled out in this court that she is a whore and that these
and
are bastards.
And like, I'm just going to call it what it is.
That's going to go right up there with Red Wedding level of, you know, definitely, you know.
The decapitation was insane.
But
absolutely insane.
Truly. Along with more dimension. So even Aegon, you know, skeezy rapist, awful.
Yes.
And
yes.
then quivering, sad, you know, insecure, and then really like lascivious and awful yeah. propositioning and all that.
Yeah.
Just a banquet.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
A true banquet, and thank you, and more directors like her, please. Seriously.
Yeah, yeah. No,
my goodness.
Very good, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
To the next one.
I'm actually just excited to see more of Eamon.
Uh-huh.
I really enjoy my anti-heroes.
Me too.
Again, Matt Smith is
you said
absolute...
hot boy standing up. Like, that's really good.
Yeah.
I like that.
I just said he was evil Legolas.
Yeah.
And he had the Neville Longbottom effect.
Mm-hmm.
Which yes. is and not just in terms of how he looks, but his energy.
Thank you.
Because
and he's a
other,
dragon. That's why hot from
other,
that point of view too.
Well, I wasn't thinking that. Yeah. I just think
he's handsome.
Quite beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like beautiful in
yeah.
his like features, mm-hmm. you know. But what is also interesting in the casting is that the other boys still look like boys.
They do.
And he looks
he's
all grown up. You know what I mean? And so yeah, and he's got a 1,000-yard stare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's looking like 30 years into the future where
yeah.
he's going to be riding the biggest dragon and
mm-hmm.
ruling over the kingdom. So mm-hmm. he's not here.
No, he's not here.
He's not here.
We all know it. Folks, like, think of your immediate circle. We all know someone who's just not there.
Yeah.
Who's just somewhere else.
There's just somewhere else.
Somewhere beyond. And that's because he is... It took someone like him... to tame Vhagar. It did.
And that energy, like that
mm-hmm.
soul, right? That the dragon responded to. Because we were just like,
mm-hmm.
how come the dragon's listening to this?
Mm.
But or responding to this. But a few years down the line, you go, oh, this was what was in him
mm-hmm.
all along.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he has not forgotten, you know, who took his eye out. And I mean, we tend to see ourselves in a positive light. So I'm sure he forgot all the way he bullied those strong boys.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm sure he has that feeling of like not being loved by his father and not being recognized. Just like Daemon did. He didn't
yeah.
always feel very loved by Viserys,
no.
right? He had a chip on his shoulder. And so it's going to be interesting. I think Viserys... And Daemon
mm-hmm.
and Vaymond
and Aemond.
Aemond.
Yes, Daemon and Aemond.
Are you seeing me with the
yeah,
names?
Yeah, yeah. No, you're
okay.
doing really well.
Aemond and Daemon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right.
I think they are interesting foils
mm-hmm.
to each other.
They are.
So I am again their nephew and uncle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also very curious to see how they play off of each other in the finale and seasons
very well.
To come.
Very well expressed, and I am. Very delighted and
yes
to see that this riff on the theme of the Rogue Prince can be
yeah.
executed so differently by two that in their own way hold that tension and create that just delicious disruption, you know, like truly, truly exquisite.
And it's
you know?
Just like, thank God they came along because they were dying of boredom.
They were...
I mean, yeah, someone got their head chopped off. And I feel like, you know, they only have any fun when the audience is tuning in every
Basically.
Couple of years.
I think so.
And it's like, otherwise they're talking about, you know, taxing wool
yeah.
and all that
yeah.
sort of stuff. So, I jest, of course, but they infuse that energy, and they're both phenomenal actors and very, very excited about where the show goes next.
Yeah.
And also what happens to Alicent now. Because you can see
yeah.
that that kindness was short-lived.
It was.
She
immediately
took
back,
that
yeah.
her husband's delusion
words,
and
yeah.
her his dying words, and she's going to run off with that next
yeah,
week.
That's,
so,
makes me sad.
So, you know, that's to say. It's just like her father's conditioning. Has very much had this
that's
effect
sad.
On her, which is quite sad.
Try not to impose your ways onto your children, people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like your shit ways.
Your shit ways.
Yeah.
Oi, and the preview was incredible as well. So looking
yeah,
forward to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't quite gauge what was happening, but it looks like is this the finale?
Can you quickly check to see if there's 10 episodes? Because it feels like there would be. It doesn't feel like they'd end on 9. How many
episodes
of House of the Dragon? It's
yeah.
saying 7, but that's wrong. It's that's
I think 7.
Completely wrong. I mean,
we just watched 8. So, lol.
It should be on the Wikipedia page.
That's okay.
We'll figure
yeah.
it out later.
Yeah, I think
but
so.
Anyway, yeah, do you want to score it? I mean, this is a 10 for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think Viserys' performance was a 10 was a for 10. Me.
Yeah.
It was absolutely moving. It was one of the some of the greatest moments in television, I think, was visual. Just his acting and, you know, seeing him with the mask and everything was stunning. The costuming of that, his acting was stunning. I don't want to give marks. Oh,
you don't want to give marks?
But okay. Overall, it was very good and I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Okay.
It was very, very good.
Wonderful. All right. Well, till next time, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
The episode 6 time jump was to introduce Allison and Rhaenyra's children as young adults, and then this time jump was to make those young adults adults. So it was important to age them up again and recast again to get them up to the appropriate age. So they're all in the 17 to 21 age range across the span of both families.
Nephews?
As the years have gone by post Alicent's outburst, Alicent has found religion as a way to redeem herself.
We know that Alicent holds closely to the new religion of the Seven Gods, which is not something the Targaryens do. It's part of what sets her apart from the house that she married into.
In the scene where Rhaenyra and Daemon return to King's Landing for the first time, they see a difference. And there were no words that were going to describe the difference. There was nothing in particular that they would point out to us. We figured out how to make it read immediately.
The big thing is a giant seven-pointed star that's hanging in the main hallway. Gaudy, if you ask me.
I would say it's nice to be home, but I scarcely recognize it.
It's become a much more quiet and conservative place. It's much more like a monastery now than it was. When we first saw it in episode 1, it's full of light and life, and there's Targaryen erotica on the walls, dragon erotica, and now it's all been replaced with objects of the Seven, and the murals have been covered up.
8 is essentially set in a hospice. The whole episode is essentially sitting by the bedside of a loved one who's dying.
Father?
The dramatic tension of this episode does not happen until Viserys shows up in that throne room, because the thinking when Rhaenyra is standing there is it's a farce.
Corlys has been potentially fatally wounded. Nobody knows whether or not he's going to survive, so there's now a question mark about who's going to take on the Driftmark throne.
It's within Alicent's motivation to want Lucerys to be deposed because it disempowers Rhaenyra's side of the family, and he's a bastard anyway, so what is he even doing there? And to give Vaemond power, because if Vaemond takes power, then he owes the Greens, and the Valyrian fleet will all go with them.
I do not understand why petitions are being heard over a settled succession.
Vaemond, one of those guys who's not particularly likable, but he always tells the truth, and he can't help it, and he can't stop himself. For that reason, he's never really got very far in life. And yet, suddenly, in episode 8, he finds himself possibly in line to inherit the Driftmark throne. He also walks right into the midst of the contentious issue of Rhaenyra's children and their real father. Because he's a kind of a do-right guy and wants to always tell the truth, he misses just how strongly and heavily everybody feels about this.
He knows that those children are not Valyrian. They're white. They got brown hair. Very obvious. And everyone knows it. It's the pink elephant in the corner that nobody wants to talk about. But Vaemond is the one person who will talk about it and who will speak out about it.
You may run your house as you see fit, but you will not decide the future of mine.
This is something he's been holding on to for like 16 years. And when the petition goes completely sideways for him, he knows he's going to fall on his sword. But I'm going to fall on my sword my way. And my way is to tell the absolute truth. So even if nothing is done about it, everybody in this room will know.
Our children are bastards!
Vaemond becomes actually kind of a sympathetic character in that moment. He goes out with a bit of honor.
I have to say this. He did it from behind. Didn't come to me face, did he? Nah, mate. Couldn't do that.
He can keep his tongue.
Viserys, after the petitions, demands that there's a family dinner and that we all sit and eat together.
It's the Last Supper. It's Viserys' last stand. It's the father and daughter story finding some sort of resolution and closure. Unexpectedly, there's a brief moment of, oh, maybe things are going to be okay.
How good it is to see you all tonight, together.
One of the issues with his leadership through the series is a refusal to step up and intervene, to speak with clarity and to lay down the law and to stand by choices that he makes. For the first time, certainly in Rhaenyra's life, she really watches him do it. He stands by the family, both sides of the family, in this final dinner.
It's like all this corruption and all this fighting, this is what it does. This is what being a king does. This is the effect of all of this on me. Why can't we just love each other? It sounds really naff, but it's like, why can't we just love each other? Why can't we just make this work?
Let us no longer hold ill feelings in our hearts. The crown cannot stand strong if the House of the Dragon remains divided. But set aside your grievances.
Forget me as your king, just love me as the man that I am to you and your family.
If not for the sake of the crown, then for the sake of this old man.
Rhaenyra and Alison have always been trying to pull themselves back from the precipice. The idea is that they never really wanted to get into this rivalry together, but they were driven there by the patriarchy, by the men in their lives. And they have a real friendship and relationship and a real love for one another that might have gotten cold and stale over the years, but it did exist. And then as soon as Viserys leaves the room, the young kids, who don't appreciate the history that has gone into this and what's at stake, kick it off again.
His only purpose is to try his best to put the house right before he dies, which he feels like he does until he doesn't.
This is a guy who was unwilling to make enemies of one side to do what was right. So a lot of things in his life went unsaid because he was trying to always tamp down aggressions. And it leads to this final moment where his final message is unclear. He's very ill. He was in a lot of pain. They put him on medication. And he wakes up in that middle of the night trying to have this unfinished conversation that he had with Rhaenyra, not realizing that the woman sitting at his side is not Rhaenyra, but Alicent. So he speaks to her as if she's Rhaenyra, and Alicent picks out words like Aegon and Prince, who is promised and prophecy and whatever, and doesn't understand all the context going back into it because she never heard the Song of Ice and Fire because she was never his heir.
Don't take milk of the poppy and then impart really important information just before you die. That's the learning curve on that one.
So it is a bit of a tragic end, but it goes to the idea that this prophecy is a bit of gossamer sliding through your fingers and it's hard to grasp all at once. And also his lack of dealing with the issues at hand at his court that he was responsible for during his life.
I don't think he ever wanted to be king. It's a burden. He's just doing a duty. He was too human to be king.
It was genuinely touching watching Paddy die multiple times from multiple different angles.
When he takes his last breath, he maybe feels like he's done all he can and he's put his house right. He did his best. He kept this secret belief in the prophecy and kept that with him until the day he died. And that's all he could do. In some respects, he wasn't the right man for the job. But in history, he kind of was the right man for the job, you know, 200 years later. So he does have a legacy.
The king is dead.
He told me he wished for Aegon to be king.
The door remains shut until we finish our business. None can know who you are or what you seek.
What of Rhaenyra?
I found out something you should know.
This is seizure! It is treason, at the least!